This is the Security Committee meeting, the first meeting in quite some time, and it is January 2nd, 2025, and it's at 10 a.m. We're going to talk about making that a consistent thing. What else do I need to do? That's it? Okay. The agenda is discussion items. I put this together because I'm it for the Security Committee, and I need all the help I can get in terms of going forward with this and pulling together a very vital part of our community. So did you get a copy of the
Agenda?
The committee?
Oh yeah, yes.
Okay.
Yes, thank you very much.
So the first item is what I was just talking about, and that is reestablishing regular security meetings. I don't know how we've been doing it without them, but and especially without Kelly or somebody in his position. So I want to reestablish the regular monthly meetings the first Thursday, right?
The first Thursday of the month at 10 a.m.
At 10 a.m. Then we did that.
Okay, that was easy.
I said a short review of the past 5 years. You fellows are both new, relatively speaking, and I really don't know how much, Mark, probably you more so, but I don't know how much people get as far as information is concerned, and the security situation is such that I really want to go through some things and say, tell you what happens in here. There have been three chiefs. I'll go with that, the original terminology that we used for the guy on top. Jeff Warbloom, he was a sergeant from 2017 to 2020, and then he became a chief in 2018 through 2020. That was Mark Martin's term as general manager. And I don't think he hired Jeff, but I do. He was supervising him. And the security sergeant at that point in time was Rick Tompkins. Jeff left. And then Tom Hennig became the general manager, and he hired Tina Talamantes. And she had significant background in, she was a police officer, in security, et cetera. She did a great job. She helped us kind of get on track and unfortunately left us. She was here from 12:20 through 9:21. And then we got Kelly Benitez. And this is a personal observation, I guess you would say. He helped us immensely. We asked for reports. We asked for help in heading off some of the issues and situations that we've been having. And I think he did a great job. I brought a copy of the reports that he did for us each month for the board meeting. So going on to the next point, what happens inside Rancho Murrieta is it's not all the time, and most of the time we feel or we find out that it's a certain group of usually young teenagers who participate in activities that we have to respond to. And so in the last 5 years, we've had trucks and cars around the reservoirs, some of them stuck in mud during the winter. We've had porta potties tipped over into Calero. We had one big incident with the fire hydrant incident. I don't know if you know about that. Yeah.
I do. I just did the accounting for it the other day.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, we didn't make out too well, did we? No. An inebriated member of the community drove his car around Clementia, around the path, and ran over a fire hydrant. We lost, in 5 hours, all of the available water in the Rio Oso tank. And Travis mentioned that a while ago. To some members of the community, it was no big deal. To other members of the community, that's what he told me. So, is that wrong?
No, go ahead.
No, I was just curious why the valve didn't get closed underneath the hydrant. Typically when one's severed.
Oh, he ran over the hydrant.
Yeah, no, I understand. Usually underneath, they still have a valve that you can shut off.
And it was there, and it was hit in just such a way that it sheared off that valve, too.
Thank you.
It was just that freak, way of hitting it.
4th of July is a big, happy time in here, but we also have things going on that are really hard to control. The year before this last 4th of July, we had 13-year-olds drinking down at the gazebo. We had kids throwing firecrackers in the middle of the crowd. We have had people, and it was a party of kids again, setting fires on the beach, setting a tire on fire on the river. vandalism, graffiti, burglary, tire slashing, underage golf cart driving, to say the least. There's always nobody stops at stop signs and nobody goes 25 miles an hour. Not that long ago, we had a woman in the community doing 85 on Murrieta Parkway. So we have a big challenge as far as security is concerned. Oh, road rage, too. That involved a gun. So this is basically a nice, calm, quiet community, but there are times when it's not. And so I think that there are things that we can do, some of the things that Kelly started that we need to continue with. I also think that we need to have somebody, if we aren't going to have a chief, then we have David Labrato. Is that how you say his last name?
We'll have somebody that fills that administrative sergeant role. Currently, okay. David is acting in that capacity.
Okay. So we will have somebody who's going to be in charge, basically.
Yes, under the amended budget that was passed in November.
Okay, so I think I beat that up. We're talking about CSOs, community service officers.
Yes.
And my understanding of the difference between the security service officer and the patrol, first of all, are they all the patrol officers going to be under that heading?
Yes.
Okay. So my understanding is that they will not wear uniforms.
No. They will have a uniform polo shirt, and there will be a guidance on the type of pants and shoes to wear. But there'll be a little bit of latitude there.
Okay.
They'll have identifying clothing, though, that identifies them as security officers.
So that's everybody on patrol. And we are going to get somebody who's going to bring reports and go through the that kind of stuff.
I would love to see your list of greatest hits on the reports, and we'll look for ways to start doing those again.
Okay. Yeah. I have in here somewhere. I have a copy of Kelly's report.
Yeah, that's great. We can do it today. We can get together for I think you and I would be able to meet offline,
okay.
and we can just kind of sit in the conference room and go through all the reports, and we can figure out ways to get those started again.
And of course, I have it all in editable format, right?
Okay.
I Do we have a job description for these officers?
We do.
Okay. I don't know that I've ever seen it.
It should be posted. I think it was approved by the personnel committee, and then it was approved by the union. So it's
okay.
There is one.
And I guess the other thing that I spent a lot of time thinking about is the scheduling aspects of patrol officers. Obviously, the commercial center, et cetera, is part of that. And I think that we need to get creative. There are times during the day when RMAs, compliance officers, can easily handle most everything. And there may be an opportunity for us to, my own personal concern is the reservoirs. You have no idea what goes on back there all the time. And if you live on Puerto, all you do is see car lights all the time back there. And we, if we're lucky, get a patrol officer through there if there was 24/7, maybe once in an evening. And if you're doing patrol over at the commercial center, it takes you at least 10 minutes to get out there. And there, that's our reservoirs. That's our source of water. And I've always felt that we are not protective enough of that area. And increased patrols at certain times of the day or night, and backing off of maybe having to do patrols all the time, all day, every day, the same routine, the same, what would you call it? Pardon me?
I understand what you're saying.
Mix it up some. Find out where we really need these people and when we need them, instead of trying to stick to some kind of schedule that may or may not work all that well. Again, the Back Lakes, absolutely one of the most significant areas we could be, we need to be patrolling, because one of the things that still makes me crazy, and I don't understand it, and I hope we can fix it soon. There are signs with the rules and regulations around all of the reservoirs, and it says dawn to dusk. Except if you're under 18, you can be there till 10 o'clock at night. I don't get it. That's on their wooden signs, and I have asked numerous times to try, and I'll admit I have not gone to a meeting and I have not brought it up. I did talk to Rod about it. That under 18 is the last group of people we want to have at the reservoirs when it's dark and 10 o'clock at night. So we need to fix that. And that goes under my heading of RMA involvement or working with us.
So are we going to skip down to RMA? We're going to go down to number six?
Right.
Or you
want to? Finances we already talked about. Sorry. One other thing, as far as scheduling is concerned, winter and summer are different. Kids don't fool around so much in the winter as they do in the summertime when it's nice out. So that's another way to look at scheduling and planning. Time of day, season, Back Lakes versus ungated area, and cameras. We do really well with cameras. I think they've been incredibly helpful in the community. But I also think that we don't have cameras at the Back Lakes that I know of. There may be one or something, but or around the reservoirs. So another reason why we need more patrol out there.
We actually do. There's a RMA has a camera at a Calero with a license plate camera on it.
Okay.
And we just installed one very recently out at Clementia, where the pavement turns into the dirt road there.
Okay.
And that also has a license plate camera. So any vehicle that drives through there will get a capture of the license plate, and whoever's going back there can be identified.
Okay.
And we're working have some kind of motion sensor chime go off at the gatehouse, which, you know, between specific times, not like all day long, but in the nighttime
hours, after dusk.
When it's not reasonable for somebody to be back there. And then that will alert the gate officer to take a look, and then they can radio over to patrol, and then patrol can do, just like what you said, that targeted approach. Because this isn't a big community, but, I mean, it's big for one person to cover, you know, across a shift. It's going to be like lightning striking for them to happen upon something. So, you know, the big thing is just having somebody and then knowing as soon as possible where to dispatch them. Mm-hmm. And so that's an effort to cover the reservoirs and that backcountry area that you were mentioning.
Yeah. Going down to RMA, one of the things that I personally have requested, and I know there are reasons why it is not perhaps the best option, but it is something that could help a great deal, and that is at the entrance to Calero, there's poles to on each side, but you know there's no gate, and I almost think if somebody looked in the maintenance yard, they would find the gate because there was a gate up there at some point in time. And then the same thing with Clementia, the road when it changes from the paved road to the stone road, there's a gate there, and that could be closed. No, it's not going to stop everybody. They're going to find some way to get in, but it's going to stop the people who wouldn't bother going all out for, you know, trying to get their car or their truck back in there.
Do you know why the gate was removed, or
I have
why?
No idea.
Okay.
Fire
people.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's something we can check into.
Well, I think it's something
they,
that
they could cut. They could cut the lock. They could cut the lock, or they
well, one of the things that that we're dealing with at RMA is the reluctance to put electronic locks on the two gates that Escuela and
just Escuela.
I thought there was another one. Bent Grass out here. Yeah, what's that? Oh, well, okay. All right. So anyways, that's a part of our problem. We have CSD, we have RMA, and now and then we have the country club. And CSD writes the rules, but the expectation is that we enforce them. And RMA enforces them. Yeah, sorry. And there has been, from my observation, a reluctance to cooperate. Not all the time, not every incident, not every situation, but, and like I said, I would love to know the real reasons behind the reluctance at times. They have two compliance officers, but they're only on during the day. And so we end up, the CSD ends up, doing all the garage doors that are open, all the people who are speeding and not stopping at stop signs after 5 o'clock. And so I would like to see us, and I know they're talking about putting back the general manager from the country club, the RMA manager and our managers having their managers meeting. I wholly support that, and I hope we can do that immediately, if not sooner, and start to bring some of these things back up to their attention. And the other part that a lot of people don't realize is that I talk about the reservoirs. CSD is responsible for the reservoir's water. RMA is responsible for, I believe it's 4 feet, but I'm not sure, it could be more, of the land that is around all of those reservoirs. So every time you want to, and then there's the property owners behind that are around the reservoirs. So I think that it's difficult. It makes it really difficult to try and get anything done because you have so many people that you have to go through and come to some consensus or agreement on. But I'd like us to start again working on that. And so that's a message that I will give in our, what do we call these things? Well, anyways, it's a message that I'm going to make sure that we do as a committee to the powers that be here.
To the board.
To the board and to the staff. You won't have to listen again.
So are you going to write a memo or something to the board? Or do you want me to put it under consent in the minutes? I want to make sure that I give you the
vehicle
to get your message out, Linda.
Let me think about this. Results of the security committee, I'd be happy to get something written up.
If you write it, then I can add it maybe to the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Does anybody have, I think I kind of hit everything. The relationship with RMA, I think, is something we really, really need to work on. We need their help. When I was walking, I used to walk that bridge, cross the bridge from north to south. And there's a path there, you know, that is supposed to be a community path, and it's a cart path. And they drive really fast. Everybody says, oh, carts don't go that fast. Well, they go faster than 10 miles an hour, and some of them go 35 miles an hour. And when you walk on that path, it's paved, sometimes you just feel like you're taking your life in your hands. And they have two, maybe three signs that say 10 miles an hour. Nobody sees them. They're down low, which you'd think because it's a golf cart that you would notice them, but right over the... I've had people tell me, there's no speed limit here, and they're standing behind the sign, you know. So that path is, to me, an example of one of the things that we need help with from RMA. They need more signs. They need, you know, to do some more enforcing on there. Kelly and I talked about doing an education day for that particular area in Rancho Marietta, where as golf carts got on, you kind of stopped them a little bit and said, you know, we're just trying to let you know that there are rules and regulations about this path, and your speed limit should be 10 miles an hour, and your child should not be 9 years old driving a cart. And so trying to do something like that, I would like us to go toward that with RMA. And so I don't have anything else. We've talked about the barcode. I had that on my list, but I think we're fine working with that. Does anybody have any questions?
I don't have any public comment.
No, I see. Oh, go ahead, Beth. Yeah.
Okay, so I do believe that the gates were taken down because the fire department, you know, was concerned about getting back to the back areas.
Right.
I think that was a reason. And I had another reason on that. RMA does not want to put the undulums.
Oh, right, I know.
On the parkway or whatever because of the fire trucks. Well, wait a minute. Sacramento has undulums.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of what I consider excuses, not reasons.
Well, so I can speak to that because I worked for the city of Sacramento and other cities. They design those speed bumps to facilitate vehicles like that specifically to go over. That's why they're sized that way, right? And they're spaced out. And then for them to have access to a pipe gate, just like all of our gates and any gate that you'll see even up. So I worked for EID and worked up in the fire zone. They just need a Knox box, and they open up the Knox box to have access. So
it's just excuses.
Yeah, I think that's a conversation we may be able to have with them, and maybe, you know, we can facilitate it as a concern for the water as well, in protection of that resource.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, and there's a lot of automation that you can do now, even with bollards. And even gates where it could be automated, so it can't be a labor thing. But you know, we may be able to share some costs since our concern
Absolutely.
is the water too.
It's our water, yeah.
Right, it's not just the land it is part of that resource, and so, and that may be their bigger concern, but there are some avenues, I think.
Okay. If nobody else has anything to say, thank you very much for everybody participating, and we're going to go forward with the security.
If it's okay, I did have one thing actually prepared.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Is that okay?
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay. And this is, I mean, this is kind of overall, I mean, this is going to touch on the barcodes, but this is pretty much kind of an overall security and kind of a little bit of where we've been, the direction that we're headed with the amended budget that was passed in November. And it's pretty brief, but the safety and security of the community is the top priority of the CSD Security Department. Mm-hmm. Okay. And staff have been working hard to derive ways to push more security services directly out to the community. And you know, that's evidenced by, you know, we had a dedicated chief, again, high dollar position. And when you have something like that, it brings some things to the table, but, you know, it's kind of, would you rather have full coverage patrol, or would you rather have an administrator, right? So the thought process, and the answer is not up to me or staff, it's up to the board and the community, obviously, but those are the kind of things that staff has been looking at, trying to get back to that full coverage posture. So since the prior security chief left around January, I believe, 2024.
Yeah, February. Yeah.
Right? Staff has explored various options for getting security back to a full coverage posture under a balanced operating budget. The amended 24-25 budget is the first budget in at least 5 years to provide full coverage security services to the community under a balanced budget. So the importance of patrol, and again, I mentioned this briefly, but there is a synergy between patrol and the gates, and it provides for an overall more resilient security operation. My understanding, and I could be wrong, and I would love feedback on this, is that having those gatehouses manned 24/7, 365 is a top priority of the community in terms of security. And so having that security patrol officer in the community out there available to give a gate officer maybe a 15-minute break, or, you know, maybe that visitor lane is really, really busy and the person has to use the bathroom. I mean, it's I mean, that person's sitting there for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. For 8 hours, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
So it's just, there is a synergy with having that patrol available, and to give breaks, to cover open shifts. Mm-hmm. It's more redundancy and resiliency in the schedule, and it greatly reduces the risks that a gate arm will be left open. I my understanding, and definitely talking to Kelly, and I sat next to Kelly for, you know, I think we were together for 4 or 5 different board meetings, and I think every meeting he really hammered on, we don't have full patrol coverage, and we almost had a gate arm open. Like, and that's one thing he told me as he was leaving, was that's the biggest risk, is a gate arm will be left open. So I do want to mention that in terms of this full coverage posture that we're working towards. And then the administrative sergeant. Since Kelly's been gone, and then, you know, kind of moving things forward and assessing the state of security, and I think you said it very well, like, there does need to be somebody that's in charge, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe not a really high dollar position, because that might be a little redundant to the overall budgeting and management of the department, but somebody that's there to make sure that the schedule and the operation is running smooth. A person to monitor issues at a little bit of a higher level to ensure quick resolution and make sure nothing slips through the cracks. There was one day, there was an issue with Lost and Found, and I asked to go over and take a look at Lost and Found and see what's going on with it, right? And I think, Amelia, did we put something about Lost and Found in the pipeline recently, or we talked about it?
I'm just sure we did, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so the first thing I noticed when they opened the patrol officer opened the Lost and Found locker for me was there was a woman's wallet. And I said, well, well, what is this? You know, and so I opened it, and right there was her driver's license. Oh. And I'm like, how long has this wallet been in here? And so it had been in there for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
And so now it's
she
not somebody.
She was probably going crazy.
She didn't live in the community. She was a guest.
No, she, but she lives here.
She didn't live in the community. She was a guest.
Her address. What? Anyway, go on.
Yeah, she was a guest. So, but we were able to track her down and return her wallet to her. And she was very happy. But I think what happens when you don't have that admin position there is that things will slip through the cracks, right? Like somebody finds it, then they go off shift. Mm-hmm. And then the person that's next, they don't pick it up, right? So there is again, synergy having that position. And obviously somebody to be the face of the department for the public. There was an instance where, for whatever reason, I was walking out to my car one afternoon and I was coming in and a couple residents came up and I just said hello because they were walking by me. And they said hello and then they stopped me and they said, hey, who do we talk to about security? I said, well, you can ask me a question if you have a question. And so long story short, their daughter was involved in a fender bender over by the North Gate and they were curious if there was some video footage of that so they could turn to their insurance company. And it was no problem. We were able to track that down for them, provide that to them. But, you know, there needs to be a person that the community knows, like, hey, you can call this person.
Right.
Or you can leave them a voicemail, and when they come back in to their next shift, they'll pick it up. And they'll make sure that these things are moving forward. They can assign it out to a community service officer to handle, but then they can stay on top of it, right, and make sure that it's each incident is getting worked fully and completely. And then obviously ensure public requests and concerns are addressed and they get to the right person in a timely manner. And then liaise with community groups. And I love all the talk about working more closely with RMA. And I couldn't agree more. I mean, this is a small community and it shouldn't just be siloed off everywhere, right? I mean, we should all work together. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everybody has their own scope that they have to work within. But, you know, these groups should work together, right? Because there are a lot of common goals, and it could be a force multiplier for security especially, right? And you know, the one camera I mentioned to you, that is an RMA camera, and they do pipe that feed into our gatehouses. So I mean, that is an example of something that is working. Same with the villages. They have cameras there. Those pipe into our gatehouses. We have full access to that. So there already are some things working, but leverage that as far as possible, and that is something that's worked into this budget to try to stretch the community's dollar as far as it can possibly be stretched to provide as many services as possible to the community. And so that amended budget and the barcode fee proposal that is, you know, would be the source of revenue that would go into it, is a comprehensive approach to enhance safety and security in the community. And to get back to that level of security services, I believe the community expects, at least from what I've heard. And so, you know, again, some of the methods that have been employed since January 24 were, number one, fix that indirect cost rate. I mean, that was, if you recall,
administrative cost.
Right, if you recall, right, the board.
Oh, that was a huge
you all voted for that, and that was huge. That was a huge step towards correcting the issues with security, and then cost management. And, you know, part of cost management has been, you know, do we need a chief position, which was very expensive? You know, is that required to run this security operation here, or can you do it with a sergeant-level position, which, again, I mean, it's a good job, it's a good-paying job, but it's not an executive-level salary. And, you know, and then looking at the structure of our gate officers, right? Do we need 8 full-time gate officers? Is that the best thing? Does that provide the most resiliency? Because what if somebody goes on vacation? I think in January 24, there were 8 full-time gate officers and one reliably working part-time gate officer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a very resilient lineup for security here, right?
Because it was one of Kelly's major complaints.
That was tough, right? And then you were down to two patrol.
A lot.
I think he did fill in at the gates every once in a while. And
more
so
than
that
once in a while.
that made it tough, right? So we're looking at a strategy where, hey, let's go with 6 full-time gate officers. They all work Monday through Friday, weekends off, which a lot of them haven't had in years. And then we fill in with a deeper part-time bench and more part-time employees. Number one, it's a cost savings. But number two, it provides a lot more flexibility and resiliency to fill those open shifts, right? And I think Director Bruce said it very well. Well, you know, it's not ideal to fill an open gate shift with patrol. And I totally agree, right? You want the patrol officer out there doing patrol. But if you have a roster of, you know, 8 to 10 part-time employees, now you've got a whole list of people you can call down, you know, and you can get somebody to come in and pick up some hours and fill a shift. And one thing, and maybe this is something, and if Beth would be interested in commenting on this, but like because you run that Facebook page, which is great, I think you reach a lot of people. I don't want to mischaracterize this, but I believe that there might be some folks in this community that might be on a fixed income and retired. Is that right?
So that'd be me.
Like I would love. I think it would be amazing to get those people trained, and if they want to make a couple extra bucks or something, pick up a shift at the gatehouse once a week or something. I don't know if there'd be an interest in the community,
but
I think that would be amazing, and you wouldn't have to commute anywhere. You would just go to the gatehouse and work, and then, you know, make some extra money. Almost like I would have a roster of 50 people in the community that from time to time wanted to make some extra money, and, you know, almost like a gig economy, right? Like Uber, where like, oh, hey, you know what? I'm going to put myself on for these shifts next month or 2 months out. I'm going to make myself available. And then as there's openings in the schedule, just like grab people and say, hey, here you go. You can have this shift. You can have this shift. I think it could be a win-win for the community and CSD training.
That's what I was going to say. Excuse me for interrupting. I see that what you're talking about is real possibilities. The biggest thing is going to be training. We just had a situation where I don't know how many people, 2-3 people, had their house cleaning staff or their leaf blowing staff or whatever turned away at the gate because they thought that they weren't allowed here on Saturdays.
So I would like to see and review those instances specifically. I know of one instance specifically where the person didn't have any documentation or information saying that they, and I'm not saying this is one of those three you just mentioned, but this is an instance where they came up to the gate officer, they didn't have any information on them that suggested they were allowed to come in to the gates. The gate officer went down the protocol, they checked on the residence account in ABDI, no mention of a guest coming in, the person wasn't on gateaccess.net with their QR code, which we are going to push some training out on that. I think there's a lot of residents that don't understand how that works, but that's a great way to get a guest registered. And then when the gate officer called, the resident didn't pick up. So the gate officer was doing their job saying there's no way to vet you to come into the community, right?
And that's what I would expect them to do.
Let me finish. So that person actually was very belligerent to the gate officer and refused to get out of the line.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I just think, you know, hopefully temperatures just cool a little bit because that person is just doing their job and they're trying to keep the community safe, and that's what's expected, right? If you can't demonstrate that you belong or that you're authorized to be inside the gates, I mean, that's the number one job, right, is to say sorry.
And that's why I think we need to be careful with barcodes. And, you know, I don't want every Tom, Dick, and Harry to have a barcode that's not secure. We've talked about that, you know. And I think whoever that was doing his or her job and doing it well. This was not that kind of a situation. You had it on the, yeah.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see those specifically because then we'll use those as training points.
Okay, so Beth Bedaris, So supposedly, a resident who owns a contracting business, for three Saturdays in a row, the contractors were denied entrance, and the gate officers cited their new employee manual said no workers allowed in on Saturdays.
Okay, so I would encourage that person to get in touch with me.
I sure hope they have by now.
So that I haven't heard anything. So yeah, if they can get in touch with me, then we can figure that out and we can clean it up. Okay. But I think there is some misinformation out there. I know the one individual whose contractor was belligerent and refused to get out of the line went on social media and was complaining about the incompetency of the gate officers. And this one gate officer was just doing her job. Mm-hmm. She, you know, I don't think we're not going to let people through that can't demonstrate. And it's not hard. What all they do is they just say, hey, just we can't get a hold of anybody. Just go across the street to Bel Air, give them a call. And then, you know, they can call us or we can get it all squared away and then you can come in. So that's, nobody should be upset about that because it's easy to do and it keeps the community safe and secure, right? Which is very important. And you know, if it's a reoccurring thing, then, you know, I would love to know about it because I'll make sure that it gets fixed.
I think. Right.
But yeah, if I don't know, then it might not get addressed.
If this has happened three times, mm-hmm. why didn't you tell somebody this was happening? The person should have alerted you guys.
Yeah, so just, you know, and I'll check with David and make sure that he hasn't been contacted. But I guarantee you, if one-off issues like this come up, this isn't rocket science.
I'm not sure.
I mean, this is very easy to fix.
Right.
I think part of the problem was just that we have new people. And if the training manual says they can't come in on Saturdays if you're a contractor or a leaf blower or whomever.
Right. So if there was a mistake in the new manual.
Exactly.
I find that difficult to believe, but I will go back and look. I will definitely look and make
Apparently, the gate officer had a copy of it.
And showed the person?
Yeah. I think that was what was said. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's not to beat a dead horse, you know, at this point. Definitely the gate officers, and this was what I was going to say about one of the other points that you made, of interchanging gate officers with patrol. There's a little bit of that now, but the training issue on that would be another mm-hmm. point, that you would basically have to cross-train people. Or if you were to get people out of the community, they also would have to be trained.
They're already all cross-trained. So when a new patrol person starts, they spend their first couple weeks working the gates.
Okay.
So yeah, so that's something that's been built into the system
okay,
for years.
Okay, so here's my point. you know a lot. I didn't know you knew this much, quite frankly. And you have really good ideas. But how are we going to communicate that to the community? And again, I would love to sit down with you and come up with a few takes on what and how we need to communicate this information, get the information organized. And one of the things I've always asked for or suggested from RMA was that they take the CCNRs and boil it down to the 12 most important ones. You can't build a unit in your garage. You know, you're supposed to put your cars in the garage. Whatever, there's, you know, and there are things that really, you pay $150 for the CCNR book when you buy a house in here. And I don't think that probably 75% of the people don't ever open that thing up.
We did.
You opened it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, before we moved up here.
Right.
Yeah. My husband's like, you can't have more than three cats.
You can't have more than three cats?
You can't have more than three pets.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And
four would be excessive, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, really?
anyway, I think that in the talking about communication, one more time. We're doing changes. We're making changes. My experience with this community is that the first time you put something out, everybody loses their mind if they're paying any attention.
Right.
And then after that, you know, you start to back it down a little bit and answer the questions. And most people, you know, if it's a good idea, come around. Mm-hmm. But we have to have our ducks in a row. We have to realize that not everybody is going to take this information in the way that we would hope they would, or if the information isn't complete enough to answer questions the first time around. So I think that's what we need to work on, particularly because things are changing. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, like I said, I like your idea. I think it's a heck of a good way to get $20 or $30 a year to pay that, in my case, 10, rather than 325 that was proposed on the Measure R. So I think if people have the right information and can get down to the details and the nitty-gritty and, you know, how much is it really going to generate and where are you going to put it? You know, are you going to put it on patrol officers? Are you, and how many of them are going to be behind the gates? You know, when so that whole scheduling thing comes into play. I think most of the time, ultimately, we will get a positive response from the community. I think that the not on everything certainly, but I think the one thing that I've learned after 34 and three quarters years here is that if it's something they care about, they'll pay attention. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Integrated Water Master Plan, 2,025 signatures on that petition. Mm-hmm. People were listening. People are scared, you know, in that particular situation. So going back to communication, it's frustrating, but at the same time, that's our job. We are responsible to the community. And that's what the board of directors has to do, and we need the help of the staff. So thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Were you able to get everything out?
That was it. Okay. Yep, that was it. I just wanted to make sure I mentioned all of that. So
the only thing I would add is I don't know if you've been told how often the gate officers get screamed at by either, like you say, the person in the vehicle or the resident the person is coming to see. Mm-hmm. And they just scream and cuss them out for doing their job. Yeah. Well, you didn't call your guest in. Well, I don't care. I mean, it's like...
Right. Right.
And thank you for that. I mean, that's... So the experience I've had, more often than not, when there are complaints that are out there and complaints that get on next door, it's when we look at them deeper for training points... It's, well, they really were just doing their job, right? And you didn't register your guest. We had, I won't go into too much, I won't belabor this, but like we had one recently where I think it was RMA compliance, and we do work with RMA compliance. They had somebody speeding. And so this person gave a fake name and... I can't remember exactly what happened, but the resident said they did not register this person and they don't know who they were. And then complained about the gate officer saying the gate officers let people in all the time that aren't authorized to be in and whatever. So it didn't take long. It was very easy to see who's registered a guest or not. And this person actually did in fact register that guest because they used the same fake name. Oh, registering. I'll say the name because it's obviously a fake name. The name was Martha Guest. Okay? And so, but like, it was obvious that this person, but they had gone on next door and for days were like complaining about security and how, and they used the word incompetent and everything else. And, you know, and I get how that can spread like wildfire, but this, we gave this information to compliance and then RMA compliance issued them a citation and they paid it because we gave them proof, like, well, no, you actually did register this person on this date at this specific time using your cell phone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so, but, like, you don't really ever, it's kind of like the thing, right? Like, you get the inflammatory part, but, like, you rarely get the retraction, right? And so, So these guys are working hard. Thank you for mentioning that. And look, everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
And we have some new people. We have new people because we're trying to stretch that dollar as far as we can. We're trying to build resiliency into the system with a deeper part-time bench so we have more people we can call to fill shifts.
How are you finding attracting people? Is it hard? Because it's always been hard in the past.
You know what? That's what I had heard. But, I mean, I think we've hired almost 10 people in, like, a month.
We used to hire people, and they'd go through the training, and they never show up for the job.
We actually had one resident, and we were very excited because, I think getting residents that want to pick up shifts here and there would be amazing, right? Because they live here, mm-hmm. and they care about the community. Mm-hmm. And you can call, and they can say, oh, yeah, I'm retired. I'm not really doing anything today. I'll drive over there and cover that shift. And then they can make some extra money, right? And then, you know, that's like the community kind of lifting itself up. And mm-hmm. I love everything about it. This person did some of the training and sat in there for a couple shifts and said, no, this isn't for me. And mm-hmm. it's not for everybody.
Right.
It is high pressure sometimes.
Right, and I can't tolerate that.
You do get a lot of screaming and yelling. One thing I will say, though, I did go and I've sat with several of our gate officers. And one thing that was, like, really heartening to me is that, because you hear the negative stuff all the time.
Oh, yeah, right.
But, like, more often than not, somebody will drive up and they're holding their pass or mm-hmm. they're holding, and then, like, a smile comes on their face. The gate officer knows them. They know the gate officer. Mm-hmm. And they go, and I would say more often than not, that was
the experience.
That's the experience,
positive right? Experience,
and,
right.
And at least, you know, the several hours that I've spent in there, but it's not. You know,
it is
hours a day,
hard
5 days a week.
On the gate officers in particular because people do yell at them. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's crazy. Yeah. I know people whose names I shall not mention, but who were very abusive. And nobody likes to have a job where you have to take that kind of abuse.
Right. And when, you know, look, everybody has a bad day, and these gate officers, they know that, and that's part of their training is just de-escalate, mm-hmm. just get people mm-hmm. on their way. One thing I do just really want to get out there is that staff here is just interested in stretching these security dollars as far as they can possibly stretch them to provide as much service to the community as possible. Mm-hmm. So this isn't, you know, this, if it came off like an effort to be sneaky about a fee or something, that was not the intention. It's really just about, you know, this community, one of the biggest reasons you live here is because you want to be behind the gates, you want to be secure, and that's all this is about, is just trying to stretch that dollar as far as possible. And there is a big cost savings component that's a part of this as well as the added fee.
I think it's really a question of making sure all the information is out there so that everybody can read it and digest it. And and giving, you know, what we've talked about, giving as much information as possible and time. You know, for some things in this community, it takes time. I don't often compare this community to other communities because this is a unique situation. Our police force is the sheriff, which if you're lucky and somebody's in serious trouble, you might get them here in a half an hour. I've heard that they've changed the district around, and so we are supposed to be getting more attention or at least in more timely way. And they don't want to be called out if somebody is, you know, giving a gate officer a hard time, but or running a stop sign or any of those kinds of basic stuff. But we should be able to have coverage from them. I mean, we pay our taxes. And so I was very pleased to hear that they are working toward giving us more support. So with that, we've had quite a morning.
So we've had comments from the public, director staff comments.
That's my comment. And also to say thank you, and also Mark Tutt. You know, when it's not, you know, harassment, I would love to sit down with you and just go over a few of these things and see how we can put it together.
No, I'm totally open to that.
And we'll talk about it at the Strategic Planning Committee meeting, too.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We are adjourned.
We're adjourned. Yes. Thank you. We're adjourned. I get the hang of this.